Welcome to the Word Theatre Short Story Podcast, your weekly access to the best short stories read by great actors, recorded live in the UK and the US. My name is Kirsty Pitt, Word Theatre's UK founder and creative partner.
And I'm Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles, founder and artistic director. Today, you will hear the marvelous Juliet Stevenson, whom we cast to perform Gerard Woodward's short story, The Family Whistle, when it was shortlisted for the Sunday Times Short Story Award. We brought actors to the Short Story Prize. There is something very special about having the author and the actor in the same room, which is what we like to do at Word Theatre. And now, you will get to hear each of their voices. To introduce his story, here is Gerard Woodward.
The Family Whistle is set in Germany a few years after the Second World War, and it's about a woman who meets a man who claims to be her husband, and that he's only just been released from a Soviet labour camp. The inspiration for the story came from a conversation I had with a German woman I met in Oxford, who told me about these instances of people returning from the war, trying to move in on other people's families. She also told me about the family whistle itself, which is a sort of musical code used for family members to identify themselves. Since writing the story, I've been surprised by the number of times people have told me, yes, they had a family whistle as well. In this recording, I really love the way Juliet Stevenson does the voices. Her reading brings out every ounce of drama from the story.
It had been a good day for Florian. She'd had some success in the shops, being among the first in the queue when she heard that there was some real coffee for sale in Faber's, and had managed to buy half a kilo of Arabica. Then she'd found some white silk stockings in Schmidt's and didn't even have to queue for them. On her way back, she had dropped quickly into her husband's bar on the Promenadeplatz and had shown him, in a furtive moment while she sat at a table chatting with his weather-worn manageress, Myra, the stockings. And he had given her a quick, appreciative kiss, promising he would bring home something good when they closed that afternoon. But then he always did. Even if it was a single sweet pastry left over from the day, or one slice of black ham. By means of such little luxuries, they felt richer than they'd ever been before the war, even though, by any accepted standards, they were far poorer. By the time Florian got home to their third-floor apartment on Marx-Josefstrasse, closing the reassuringly solid oak door behind her, it would be just half an hour or so before Wilhelm returned. She may as well have waited in the cafe so they could have gone home together. But Wilhelm never liked her doing this, since she always got involved in the clearing up. Florian enjoyed helping, but Wilhelm had always insisted that his own wife should never be an employee, no matter how casual. Florian went into the dining room and placed her gleanings of the day on the table, laying them out like a little trove. She spent a while arranging them as though she was an artist preparing a still life. The tin of coffee formed the centerpiece. The silk stockings, still folded, shimmered beside it. A packet of eggs. A handful of black cherries. A block of butter. Everything was so perfect. Beautiful. Promising. She really wished she was an artist. There was a knock at the door. A quiet, rather tentative knock, like the one a nervous child expecting to be told off might give. Was Wilhelm back so early? Had he forgotten his key? It had happened once or twice before, so Florian went straight to the door and opened it. There was a man standing outside, tall, but desperately thin. He had vague, hollow eyes, and his cheeks were sucked in. He was wearing a nearly new, unbuttoned greatcoat over filthy, tattered clothing. He was the sort of man you saw frequently a few years ago, wandering hopelessly in the city, sometimes being led by the arm of a stern-looking woman, or sometimes by children. The returning soldiers, starved and stunned, sometimes from years in captivity, struggling to recognize the world they had returned to. They were turning up even now, all these years after the war, mostly from Soviet slave camps. The Russians had hung on to their prisoners with a grim, sulky determination after the war. She presumed this man was one such, and had forgotten where he lived. She wondered if she could give him something, perhaps a piece of cake, before sending him on his way.
Florian,
came the surprisingly deep, though trembling voice. It was not a voice she recognized, any more than the face it came from, though the shock of hearing her own name spoken and of seeing the smile forming on that same mouth, revealing gray, broken teeth, made her cling to the door a little tighter. The smile hung on the face like a little pinned memo, expecting the same in return. When it didn't come, the smile quickly left the face, and a look of hardened disappointment replaced it. The head cocked itself. The chin turned up a little, bathing the face in light from Florian's hallway, which allowed Florian to notice the man's eyes for the first time. Little distant pearls.
What's wrong, Florian? Don't you recognize your own husband?
It was a foolish reaction, but without thinking, Florian slammed the heavy door shut with such force that the dinner gong, which had sat unused on the hall table for 15 years, found its voice and chimed smugly. The man on the landing had been slow to react, but now he was knocking sharply on the door.
Don't be idiotic, woman! It's me, Wilhelm! Let me in, why don't you?
Florian leant with her back against the door. Her breath was short, her heart unsteady. She could see down the long tiled hallway and in through the open dining room door her still life on the table, and suddenly felt protective of it. The man on the other side of the door went on.
What is it, Florian? Have you got another man? I'm reasonable. We can talk it through.
He had found the crack in the door, the little hairline fracture that ran vertically a few inches from the hinge. At some points it was just wide enough to act as a peephole, though no one would notice it otherwise. But this man had found it, and had brought his lips right up to it, talking so closely that Florian could see a patch of moisture forming on the plasterwork nearby.
We can sort it out. A little misunderstanding. It's been a long time, after all. No one would blame you, Florian. I've been through hell these past few years. When did you last hear from me, eh? I was in Libya. You know what happened to me? I rowed across the Mediterranean in a little dinghy, no bigger than the ones they have on the boating lake in the Hofgarten. I was the last German out of North Africa. Saw all my comrades killed. Made it all the way to Sicily. Greeted like a hero in Syracuse. They said they would recommend me for the Iron Cross, first class. Then the next thing those bastards did, sent me straight to the Russian front without even a day's leave. Out of one cauldron, straight into another. Though you wouldn't call a Russian front a cauldron, more an icebox. A deadly, deathly icebox. Can you hear me, Florian? Why won't you let me in?
Slowly, through the crack in the door, the voice was doing its work. Monotonous, quiet, and though tremulous, under extreme control. The tremor was masking something more resonant beneath, a profound undertone that Florian was beginning to recognize. The man gave a loud cough, still with his lips to the crack, so that spittle shot through. She caught a tang of his breath, an empty larder smell.
"You would feel sorry for me, Florian, if you saw what I had to go through on those snowy plains.
Little boys, my fellow soldiers. Little boys of 18 years, and some were younger. Some had lied about their age to get into the army. Such patriots. You would have been proud of them, Florian.
And the Russians were merciless. When we got bogged down, I was lucky to be taken prisoner.
They took very few prisoners, but slaughtered our little boys like they were vermin. I saw whole schools of young men wiped out by a single flamethrower. That's how it seemed to me, Florian. Those boys, so young. And when we were taken prisoner, we soon learned we weren't so lucky after all, but were to face an ordeal far worse than death. Far, far worse. Marched across icy wastes, half naked, starved. Some people were eating insects and spiders, our only food.
It was shame on mankind that they did this to us.
And all the while, taunting us, "You're nothing but a filthy Nazi." And I would call back, always, "And you're nothing but a filthy communist." They would laugh at me, Florian. They would laugh at me, and then beat me across the face. The voice paused. In the ensuing silence, only their breaths spoke.
"I know you're still there, Florian. I can see your shadow under the door. And I can smell you.
And I can smell all the smells of our home.
Nothing's changed.
Why won't you let me in?" Florian came away from the door and turned round to face it. She cleared her throat, unsure quite of what tone of voice she should use. She decided she should try and sound as neutral and as matter-of-fact as possible. "I'm sorry, sir, but I must ask you to go away. If you're claiming to be my husband, then you're very mistaken." There was a pause on the outside, a shuffling sound, as though the man was repositioning himself, thinking up a new strategy.
"Florian, you're being stupid. Look, you're shocked, I know. We've all changed. It's been too long. Those evil bastards kept us locked up all those years. I didn't even know if the war was still going on, or if we'd lost. All we heard was rumour and no real news. They only let me out about a month ago. And only then did I find the war's been over for 4 years, those bastards. And now I come back to find my country in ruins. People looking thin, undernourished, but not the Jews. They look well fed. I passed through the city centre today and I wondered who those healthy people were with their signs saying, 'Open the gates of Palestine, set us free.' They were Jews, Florian, Jews staging a demonstration, making demands, and no one was saying anything."
"No, you mustn't think like that."
"Oh, I know. Don't worry. I've been told what to think. We're all hanging our heads now, aren't we, saying it was nothing to do with me. I've seen them already on the trains, wringing their hands, making me sick to my stomach, Florian. So I've got to say that I fought on 3 fronts, lost all my friends, and spent 7 years in a slave labor camp for nothing. And now my own wife refuses to acknowledge me. For God's sake, Florian!"
He thumped the door. Florian imagined he'd hit it with his head.
"Open up and let me in."
"I can't."
"Why in heaven's name not?"
"You don't understand, whoever you are." Florian had raised her voice, was almost shouting. "My husband was returned to me in 1946, less than a year after the war ended. We've been living happily together for more than 3 years. Wilhelm saw me through the darkest days of those terrible winters. And now he works. He's supporting us. You, whoever you are, you're not my husband. Another long silence.
Florian, I know what's happened. The man you think is your husband is nothing but an imposter. A former friend of mine from one of the camps. Of course, we talked a great deal about our lives. We made pacts, like all the men did, that if anything should happen to us, the other, if they survived, would inform the other's loved ones. So, in the course of many years, I must have told him so much about you and about our life that he could have passed himself off as me. He knows all our secrets. We did look similar, same height and build. We could be taken for brothers. And then you must have been easily led, having not set eyes on me for so many years and wondering how much I could have changed in all that time. You were ready to make allowances for me not being quite the same, for being different in some indefinable way. Isn't that what you felt when you first met this man?
Florian was thinking back to the day that Wilhelm first appeared. It had been under similar circumstances. A knock at the door, a cautious conversation, but that time she had no reason to doubt the man who was proclaiming him, he was proclaiming himself to be. By then the war had been over for a year, and the city still seemed empty of men. It was rumored that there were millions of men still held in the prisoner of war camps, hundreds of thousands in Europe held by the Americans and the French and the British, perhaps millions in Russia. Why were they allowed to hold on to them for so long? Why were they so reluctant to return them? The war was over. Germany was no longer a threat. It no longer even existed. It had been said that their status had changed. The men in the camps were no longer prisoners of war, but had been reclassified as disarmed enemy persons, and so were no longer protected by the Geneva Convention. How wonderful to get around a law or a treaty by simply changing the names of things. And then the population of men gradually increased, but they were shocking people, in tatters, skeletal, ashen. Some died within days of arriving home. She knew of housewives who were terribly upset by the state of their returning menfolk. All the married women of the city lived in dread of what figures might turn up on their doorsteps. She had been fortunate. Not a single bomb or shell had landed in her street or within 100 yards of her house. And when the occupying armies arrived, for some reason they hardly bothered with the upper levels, rarely climbing beyond the second floor. She was troubled only once, when someone tried to batter her door down, but it had stood firmly. The only danger was in leaving the apartment to find food and water. So she had survived, and when Wilhelm called, things were just beginning to return to something like normal. She was down to her last drop of perfume when he knocked. By chance, she had applied it that very morning in a kind of ritualized, reverential act of self-anointing, knowing it could be a very long time before she saw any more. And one of the first things that Wilhelm had said was, "Ah, to breathe that scent again, after all these years." It did strike her as odd. She had been given that half bottle by a friend in 1943 and had never used that brand before then. It should have been a strange smell to Wilhelm. The man on the other side of the door suddenly burst upon it in a brief cry of frustration. "This is nonsense, Florian. You cannot have been so foolish as to have been taken in by that fellow. You know what he is? A nasty little con man. He told me before the war he was well known in Berlin. He owned a nightclub in Friedrichshain until it was closed down by the Nazis. Only it wasn't a nightclub like you or I would think of going to. It was nothing more than a knocking shop. A brothel.
You wouldn't believe the stories he told me about his life before the war. They amused me while we were in the camp, but only in the way that men together will be amused by such stories. In the real world, they would have disgusted me. And I dread to think how many times he must have got the clap. Florian, if you've been intimate with this man, you're at great risk. I'll be frank with you. At great risk of catching something nasty. Stop it! Florian suddenly called back through the door. I won't listen to such talk. How could I believe you're my husband if you stoop so low as to tell tales on a former friend? She was annoyed because she had indeed suffered since taking the new Wilhelm into her bed. A horrible urinary infection that lasted for weeks. The doctor said he'd seen it all before in the wives of recently returned soldiers. I'm afraid even the warriors of the Wehrmacht were guilty of taking things further than is necessary in military terms, he had said. She wished he'd spoken in less vague terms, but she realized afterwards that he meant Wilhelm had probably ravished some poor Russian women on his way to Stalingrad, just as the Russians had done on their way in the opposite direction. It'll all come out in the wash, the doctor had said, smartly patting her rump as she left his surgery, his customary parting gesture, which she had always thought quite normal, until now. A former friend who does this to me? What do you expect? You think I should just let him move in on my own family and not care about it? What would you think of me then? Florian, I'm amazed at you, that you should be so easily fooled. You cannot believe for a moment that I'm not your Wilhelm. My memories are your memories. I remember our wedding day in the Church of St. Ludwig, Marienplatz, and that excellent reception provided by your father, the old goat I used to call him, and you told me off, do you remember? Do you remember where we met? At that strange party held by that official of the Union. I can't remember his name, but you were somewhat overdressed. How could I ever forget what you looked like to me on that night? In that white dress, sewn all over with mother of pearl, with that high neck, almost like a ruff. And I was surprised the first time I saw your skin, that it shone. In just the same way. You remember me saying that you looked like mother of pearl? I could stand here for hours, recounting the moments of our courtship in every detail. Surely you won't make me do that before you let me in.
It wasn't quite enough for Florian. She sobbed when she heard her beauty described through the door. But she sobbed because she was remembering how the other Wilhelm had said almost exactly the same thing. About the dress. About the wedding. Those were the things he remembered as well. Whoever was the imposter among these two, a great deal of reminiscing had been going on in the labor camp. You say you told your friend all the details of our past together. How do I know you aren't that friend and are now trying to pass yourself off as my husband? The man laughed for the first time.
Think about it logically, Florian. If I was the friend and had been released 3 years ago after the true husband, why would I come here pretending to be him when I would know that he was already here? That he would have settled himself back into his old family, made love to his wife in such a way that she remembered every touch and every scented breath. It would be a waste of my time. If you have two men claiming to be your husband, it is clear that it would be the first one to return home that would be the imposter.
Yes. Florian could not help but appreciate the logic of this argument. And Wilhelm was such a logical, methodical person, always cutting through her wayward, woolly ideas with the sharp instrument of his reasoning.
And where is this other Wilhelm? I should very much like to meet him. Is he cowering now in the back bedroom? Or has he already hopped out of the window and down the fire escape?
No. He's out at work.
Work? Well, I expect there's a lot of work for a joiner now, with all these houses being rebuilt. He must be doing very well.
Florian was silent. She knew that Wilhelm's failure to take up his old trade would count against him in this man's eyes. Wilhelm said that he couldn't carry on in the joinery trade because of eye problems, and instead he managed to get bar work in one of the few bars that were still open in those days. Then, as the city slowly rebuilt itself, he worked very hard indeed, and then just recently went into a partnership with a rough, tough Berliner to open their own cafe on the Promenadeplatz. A respectable bar, serving the clerks and office personnel of the business district, not some shady, seedy gin palace or knocking shop that this other man imagined.
So, is he a good joiner, this Wilhelm of yours? I've heard he's one of the best.
A drop of moisture had formed around the crack in the door and was running in parallel down it.
If you don't go away, I will have to call the police, said Florian, her one last attempt at resolve.
How she loved that Wilhelm that had returned to her. She'd never known anyone so kind, so loving, far more loving than he'd been in the days before the war, when almost the day after their marriage, his romantic streak seemed to evaporate. The new Wilhelm loved his children all the more, greeted them like you'd imagine someone who hadn't seen them for 7 years would. He wasn't afraid of them. He seemed to treasure them. And they, though much older and with few memories of their father before the war, responded. They felt treasured in ways that few people can. Anxious at first about having this stranger come to live with them, they soon adored him, and strangely began to talk about their childhood for the first time, as though it was something that happened in the distant past. They realized, for the first time, that their lives were beginning to make a story. The man outside spat on the floor. Florian couldn't be sure, but that's what it sounded like. She heard the click of spittle on the stone slabs of the landing. A dirty habit that her true husband would never practice, unless it was something that he'd picked up in his years in the army and in the prison camps.
So when will he be home, this husband of yours?
Soon.
She regretted saying it. If this man was determined to stake his claim, it was an incentive for him to hang around and challenge her, Wilhelm, when he came up the stairs. Perhaps it would get violent. She should have just said nothing, and he would have gone away. After a while, he would have given up. He couldn't stand on the landing forever. She heard his voice further away this time. He was talking to someone else. Someone must have come out of one of the other apartments, one of her neighbours. He was probably trying out his claimed identity on them. But there were few people left who would know her, Wilhelm, or would have a clear memory. So many had fled the city in 1945, and they didn't seem to have returned. Older ones, and many had been older people, had died since. She could only make out a few words. The man who claimed to be Wilhelm was sounding agitated, almost bullying in the way he was talking to the person, who must have had his way blocked down the stairs.
You must remember me. Look at my face. Look at it, she heard the man saying.
Of the interrogated one's replies, she could hear only a faint, apologetic murmur. Then a dismissive cry.
To hell with you, then.
And the footsteps returning to the door. Then a soft thump against the woodwork, a diffuse, distributed noise that was not a knock demanding entry, but something else. Then a sliding, shifting, rubbing noise, as though someone was nervously polishing her door. Wilhelm must have been leaning his back against it. She could picture him, his back against the door, one leg raised and the knee bent, so the sole of his boot rested against the lower panels.
A cough. A shuffling sound. Was he actually scratching his back against the door? Massaging himself? She thought she heard a little moan and sigh of pleasure come from the man to confirm this. It was as though, denied entry, he was making use of surface that was in closest proximity to what he desired, as though the old brown woodwork was the extreme outer layer of herself. A sort of skin. There was the sound of metal tapping and clicking. For a moment, a busy, industrious sound, things being unwrapped and unscrewed. Was he going to have lunch out there? Then a tolerably close sound that seemed, for a moment, to rip the door open as though it was made of cardboard. The sound of a match being struck against it. He'd been rolling a cigarette, and the smell of tobacco quickly arrived in the apartment. It was not a brand she recognized. Certainly not the Ecksteins that Wilhelm used to smoke, but some horrible, coarse Russian tobacco from the Crimea or somewhere. Where would this end? She tiptoed up the passage to the dining room to glance at the clock on the mantelpiece. 2:20. The cafe would have closed for the afternoon. Wilhelm might be home in 10 minutes. She glanced again at the goods on the table. The cherries, the coffee, the stockings. How she wished this man would go away and allow her to use these things. Why was she tiptoeing? She didn't want the man outside to be aware of her position, but he seemed to sense it anyway. While she was at the far end of the passage, he suddenly called out, "Hey, are you still there?" "I think you should go now," said Florian, suddenly realizing her furtiveness had no purpose, and walking noisily back to the front door as she spoke. "This is a pointless exercise. I know you're not my husband. You know it. That person on the landing you just spoke to knew it. So I want you to go now, this minute, or I'll call the police."
"You have a telephone that works?"
Florian didn't answer.
"But I've just thought of a way of proving my identity to you, once and for all. You'll find it is the joiner who is the imposter, when I ask you if you remember the family whistle."
Florian could tell by the volume of his voice that he was still talking with his back to the door as he said this. Now it was amplified as he came off the door and turned around to speak directly through the crack again. A puff of that rank tobacco preceding his voice.
"You remember, we never used it much. But in those days, it was important we had a way of identifying each other, children included. You remember? It went back to my father's days in the trenches, the signal he gave. You could whistle it to me now, couldn't you? And you know that your husband would never, ever, ever teach anyone else the family whistle. No matter how close a friend, no matter how trusted a comrade in arms. The whistle would be like a key that would unlock everything. I'll tell you what. That first Wilhelm of yours, that fake joiner who comes home to you every night with his hand punctured like a sieve with his bad nailing and sawing, I bet you $1,000 that he has never whistled our family whistle. He can't do it."
"And can you?" Florian knew the end was now close. She had never asked the first Wilhelm for the whistle. She'd never thought of it. She had forgotten all about it. But that was because the first Wilhelm didn't need to prove anything. He wasn't in contention with another man claiming to be Wilhelm. She realized the new Wilhelm's reply was going to be the whistle itself. She heard him reposition himself so that his mouth was right up to the crack. She heard him wet his lips. She heard the inrush of breath as he prepared. And when the whistle came, it was moist, breathy, and beautiful. She remembered it from the days of her courtship, when he would whistle it through the door of her uncle's vacant basement flat, when their early secret liaisons occurred. She remembered when he taught it to the children, so that they would always know who to let in and who not. She wondered how she had ever forgotten it, this haunting tune that began with those two repeated notes, how like the call of a cuckoo, Florian thought, and then a trill, a quick flourish, and it was gone. Where it had come from, perhaps it was a tiny portion of a Mozart symphony, or a refrain from long-forgotten music, half-lament. Florian never knew, but she realized that it meant that the person on the other side of the door was her true Wilhelm. The song came a second time, and no words were spoken by either husband or wife as Florian delicately turned the lock, lowered the handle, and slowly pulled the door towards her. Then suddenly the door was in her face and knocking her back against the wall. All the quietness and gentleness that had silted the conversation through the door in the long minutes of its duration was swept aside by its opening. There was less than a centimetre of gap before Wilhelm took his chance, making sure that it wouldn't close again. In a moment of cold, silent energy, he was in the apartment and the door was closed behind him. He grabbed hold of shrinking Florian, took her by the shoulders, examined her in a momentary frenzy of looking, and then stuck his face right into hers and kissed it, forcing his tongue into her mouth in a way that suggested an interest in taste rather than affection or passion, as if he was confirming her identity, taking a big lick of the inside of her mouth. For her part, she caught the strong flavor of bitter tobacco and nothing but emptiness beneath it. Then he took her head in his hands, rough, dry fingers, learned about her scalp and chin, worked her mouth open, moving the jaws as though on a piece of broken gadgetry. Then he did the most extraordinary thing. He blew into her mouth. She felt the puff of cold air. Then what was he doing? Looking in her mouth. What for? Checking her teeth? And then pain, a sharp jab. He'd gone in there and given her tongue a rough bite. Not hard enough to do any damage, but enough to bring a stream of tears from her eyes. Wilhelm stepped back, wiping his mouth. Now he had her hair in his hands. He pulled her up by it, said they were face to face.
"You rotten little whore," he said. "I would be within my rights to thrash you to death for this. So just say a prayer of thanks to the Almighty that I'm not a man given to jealousy, and I'll spare you your life."
He pushed her roughly along the hall towards the dining room. She begged for a moment to go to the bathroom so she could deal with her mouth because she thought it was bleeding. She dried her face in there and tried to compose herself. Wilhelm, her first Wilhelm, was due back any moment. She could lock herself in the bathroom and wait for him to return. Let the two of them sort it out. Perhaps the first one would win. But it was no use thinking like that. The second Wilhelm, having successfully invaded, was not going to give up his new territory. As she came out of the bathroom, she found him waiting for her outside. He had taken off his greatcoat, and she was shocked by the thinness of the body beneath. He looked as though he could have blown away in a breeze. His strength was all in his anger. There was no muscle in his body at all.
"You will give me something to eat first. Then I will wash. And then we will see to other business."
There was a sound of a key in the lock of the front door. Both heads turned to watch. But the new Wilhelm had put the bolt on. He took hold of Florian again, whispered urgently in her ear.
"If you still want proof, just ask that man for the family whistle. I will give you both that one chance. Ask him for the family whistle. See what he does.
The struggling with the key in the lock came to an end, and there was a call. Florian? Are you in there? That voice, so mellifluous and musical. How could she have ever thought it belonged to her husband? I can't get in, Florian. Florian and the new Wilhelm both approached the door quietly. There was more knocking. Florian, can you come to the door? It's stuck. Wilhelm, Florian called. A pause. What's wrong, Florian? Is there something wrong? Wilhelm, listen to me. Florian looked at the man beside her, who nodded insistently. I want you to give me the family whistle.
What?
Through the door. Give me the family whistle. There was silence. Such a long silence. Florian stood 2 feet from the big, dark oblong of the door, believing just for a moment that she might hear the whistle. That same melancholy tune, far more sweetly sung. But what she heard instead was footsteps departing. They moved slowly away from the door, backwards, she imagined, then paused at the top of the stairs. Then she heard them descending, quickly, lightly, down the first flight, and then the second. And then they were gone. She turned. Wilhelm was already in the dining room. She could see him through the open door. He was examining the things on the table. He opened the tin of coffee, stuck his nose in and sniffed, closing his eyes with pleasure. Then he gestured with a big, sweeping arm for her to join him.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to Gerard Woodward's The Family Whistle, performed by Juliet Stevenson. We're counting on you to tell your friends about us. And if you have not signed up to become a Word Theatre free or contributing member, please do at wordtheatre.org. We want everyone to join us on our mission to make a better world, one story at a time.
If you like our podcast, please support Word Theatre and our authors by purchasing their books at bookshop.org/shop/wordtheatre.
Thanks for tuning in. We welcome your feedback. Write something for us on our Word Theatre Facebook page or send us an email at admin@wordtheatre.org. And please, be sure to come to our live streams. If you're on our mailing list, you'll know what's coming up. But now it's time to sign off.
Thanks for tuning into the Word Theatre Short Story Podcast. And a big thank you to Jonathan Sachs for composing our theme music and to Joseph Cho, our technical director. Kirsty Peard in England, signing off.
And I'm Cedaring Fox, back in Los Angeles. Best until next week.